who you're with.
What's going on? They'd seen what had happened a few days previously at Bethphage with Lazarus, who'd been dead 3 days. And this prophet, teacher, rabbi, comes along, calls him, and he comes out of the grave. Well, that's amazing. Who is this man? And once again, people are beginning to say, well, could he be? Is it possible that this really is Messiah? And then Palm Sunday. And all that happened seemed to accord very much with what the Jewish people were expecting. I quote from Nick Page's book. Nothing Jesus ever says is more of a signal than this donkey ride into Jerusalem. Jesus is using the symbolic vocabulary of Zechariah. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter. It's his clearest statement of his messianic credentials. I am the king, is his message. And so he goes, after the triumphant entry into Jerusalem, he goes, and I quote, he entered the golden gate. They knew he would turn right, would march to the fortress of Antonia, supported by 2.5 million Jews who were there for the Passover, who would boot out the Romans. They waved their branches, shouting, save us now. And he turned left. What's gone wrong, I ask? And it gets worse. Instead of releasing or starting a coup against the Romans, what does he do? He goes into the synagogue and he makes a mess of it. He really causes trouble, mayhem. No wonder the Jewish leaders didn't like him. And it gets worse. On the Thursday night, he has a meal, but he doesn't sit at the head table. Oh no! He gets down and does the meanest thing that you could expect a servant to do. He washes their feet. Who is this man? Can he be Messiah? Or have they all got it wrong? And that's precisely what Judas thought, wasn't it? But Peter, you see, Peter, who, bless his heart, on more than one occasion, got there. You're Messiah! And so Peter loyally, bravely, follows Jesus to Gethsemane, and then what happened was the last thing Peter wanted. Jesus is actually taken as a cheap prisoner. And of course Peter does something. You'd expect him to, wouldn't you? Whips out his sword and tries to defend Jesus and gets ticked off for doing it. What's gone wrong? Well, I'll tell you. You see, Jesus' kingdom is not like the Roman kingdom or the Jewish religious system. It wasn't. It's a different kingdom. Now, you think yourselves back, will you, to Matthew 5, for example. And what did he say? Blessed are the high ups. No. Blessed are the poor in spirit, the underdogs. The second, third, fourth, 11. 15, sorry, Alex. It's 15 rugger, isn't it? Thank you. Blessed are those who mourn. Happy are those who mourn. No. Blessed are the peacemakers. Now, okay, we all like a bit of stir, don't we? Causing a bit of trouble, but no. Blessed are the pure in heart. Well, that's otherworldly. And precisely that's the truth. We who are Christians live in two worlds. Now, I'd like a picture, please, of my... there we are. Just to remind you, that's my council tax bill. I don't ask you to pay it, because it will be paid anyway. But I, David Edgington, David and Judy Edgington, and all of... Well, unless you're holidaymakers, if you belong to Purbeck, you are all citizens of Purbeck. And I guess we are all UK citizens. And therefore, we have to obey the laws of our state, of our area. I try to be a good boy in Purbeck. I usually pay my parking fees. I have to pay my council tax. Had I been here 20 years earlier, I'd have taught your kids. I've been involved in education. So, yeah, I am a citizen of Purbeck. But I'm also, says Paul in Philippians 3, a citizen of heaven. Is that on, please? Right, no, not on that one. That's right. We have dual citizenship. You and I have dual citizenship. And sometimes those two citizenships are going to clash. Let me give you some examples. The first one is for real. John Massey was a friend of ours in St. Albans. He was quite senior with HSBC, and he was responsible for the whole lending part of HSBC in Kensington High Street. Now, if you didn't know, Kensington High Street is quite a posh area of West London, so he was quite busy lending lots and lots of money to lots and lots of wealthy people. But increasingly, he found that there was a clash between what he was told to do and what he as a Christian felt he could do. And he knew he was encouraging borrowers to borrow more than they could repay, and he knew that. And he resigned and lost his job. You see, dual citizenship. I can't do that as a Christian banker. Now, another example, which is not quite true, but I have talked to the person concerned. We all know Carrie, who's an excellent actress and also an outstanding principal of the nursery school. Now, Carrie has been asked to go. She's been promoted, and she's gone to Wolverhampton to a very much a multi-faith nursery school in the middle of Wolverhampton. And, of course, Carrie, at Christmas time, does what principals do. She organises a nativity play. It gets the kids involved. It helps them to learn the Bible story, and it's fun for all concerned. And so off she goes, beginning of November. She finds Mary, and she finds Joseph, and the angels, and the shepherds, and all the rest of it. And a letter comes from the governor saying, "Dear Mrs. Gelder, we don't believe in Christmas here. We believe in Winterval. You can't do that." What should she do? I've asked her, and I'll tell her the answer sometime, but there you are, dual citizenship. Now, as you've gathered, I was head of RE at Watford Grammar School. Fine. I had no problems about teaching other faiths. That's part of my job. But when it came to taking assemblies, which I did, I was responsible for assemblies, I had to struggle. I had to struggle, should I or shouldn't I invite a Muslim imam and a Jewish rabbi to take an assembly? I struggled and did, but I'm not sure that it was right. I don't know. I knew that that's what was expected of me, and I knew I was in a multi-faith school, but I also knew that I was a Christian, and I was walking on glass some of the time. Now, you and I are living in a multi-faith culture, a secular culture, a materialistic culture, and we're also citizens of heaven. And I would have thought that for many of you, particularly those who are in employment and work, there will be times when there will be difficult decisions to make. What should I, as a citizen of heaven, do in this situation? And if Andrew told you the Christian life was easy, sack him. That's not true, Andrew. It's a challenging life. All right? So the first thing I want to say is just remember that the Christian life will present you with challenges. Now, secondly, notice what Jesus did. He went into the temple and he caused havoc. He upset them, he overthrew the money changers and got them out. But that wasn't the first time he'd done it, had it, was it? Think back, the number of times that he and the Pharisees not just squabbled, but he went for them. He called them whited tombs. Whited sepulchres. He called them hypocrites. That's a harsh word to use. I would never use that of Y. Vicar. He wouldn't like it, would you? No. And don't blame him. But Jesus actually called the Pharisees hypocrites. And it seemed that he drove a coach and horses through what they taught, for the elaborate rituals that they kept. Now, wait a minute. We're living in 2014. Does that affect us? How do we regard our rituals, our forms of worship? Now, let me be quite clear. I understand and I value the liturgy that you use here. I come from a Baptist background, and we have our own rituals. It's called hymn sandwich. Hymn, prayer, reading, hymn, announcements, collection, forgotten the children's talk, hymn, address, prayer, hymn. And that's what happens, week on, week out. And 2 weeks ago, I was down near Watford, and I was taking a service, and I gave them hymn sandwich. It's what they wanted, and it suited. This morning, I came at 8 o'clock to 1662. Some amazing words were said there. But if we're not careful, we can be so hooked up on getting the ritual right that we lose the meaning of true worship. The Baptist church where we used to worship is much bigger than this. It's probably three times bigger. It's formal, seating, balcony, platform, organ, the pulpit, the lot. And one of our church secretaries felt that we weren't getting communion right. Now, in the Baptist church, if you didn't know, the minister will sit at the big table, the deacon's either side of him, and at a given point he'll dish out little plates of bread and individual cups, and the deacons will trot round giving it to everybody. Now, the church secretary was very concerned because we didn't all come up at the right time. And so she's a mathematician, she did a very careful flow chart in colour. And we all had a lesson, and boy, we got it right. We marched up. But Veronica, love, you've lost the plot. You see, communion, have you got a picture of communion, please? It's all about a family meal. It's sharing together. Now, the nearest I've got to that was at Greenbelt, years and years ago. If any of you have been to Greenbelt, stick your hand up. Yep. You would know that it's a massive big exercise, and the Sunday morning you get a very good preacher, and it was Paul Boateng that particular week, I remember. And after his sermon, we all sat around in 20s on the grass, those chairs, and somebody bought some Coca-Cola, and we shared it. And I thought, that's it. That's what communion all about. It's a family sharing meal. Now, Anglicans rightly regard communion, the Eucharist, as very important. So do Baptists. We tend, I think, to put bolt it onto a main service, and I don't like that. Sometimes when I take communion, I make that central to the entire service. But okay. But what's it all about? Why do we worship it the way we did? Again, I must defend myself. Whenever I go to Cambridge, I queue up at King's College, because I want to enjoy the worship. And I know what's going to happen. I get in there and I marvel at that fluted roof. I wait for the choir to come in and they sing so beautifully. And I love Stephen Clearby on the organ. It's all wonderful, but it's probably, for me, a concert. How do you worship? Have we helped you this morning to worship God by the songs that we've chosen? The worship group, has that helped you in your worship? Yesterday, the room was full. I gathered the car park was full of people having their cars cleaned. And that's great. Yes, Andrew, we really are crossing the room. We're getting people involved in the church. That's wonderful. Move on, please, can you, to the next stage when they come through those doors. Now remember that we're living in a multi-faith, secular, kids do not know Bible stories, they're not taught them at school today, materialistic, blessed are the money makers. Get yourself up, my friends, push yourself up, push somebody else down if you want to. Get to the top, lad. That's the culture. They come through those doors, and what do they hear? Do they understand the songs that you sing? The words that we use? Washed in the blood of the Lamb. Do you ever get your kids to wash in Lamb's blood, Farmer? what's going on? Yes, it's so easy, and you know what it's all about. Of course you know what it means. They don't. I have been preaching for 50 years, not all this morning, but I've been preaching a long while, and I believe in preaching. But will they want a sermon? Or will they say, wait a minute, Vicar, we've got some questions for you. Why does God allow my Aunt Fanny to die? Why about suffering? Why? Have we sufficient understanding of what we believe to help them think through those issues? We want them to find faith, to find the Lord Jesus as their own Saviour, but watch your language, because so easily we heard this on Wednesday morning in the Bill Hybels job. You know, how watch your language. How are we going to prepare ourselves? Now, I'm going back to the 1960s. That's 50 years, isn't it? I was then a young man, believe it or not, and I was worshipping in Sidcup Baptist Church. Now, Sidcup is south London, beginnings of Surrey. And this was just after the war, when, for the first time, Sunday was seen as a day out. And Sidcup, you wouldn't know, is on the A20, and it's on the route to the Kent seaside. And in the summer, for the first time really, motor cars were available for more and more people, and lots of people went to the seaside and came back on the A20, about 7 o'clock. And for the local teddy boys, this was a thing to watch. And they all dressed up in their kit. They came from Footscray or Mary Cray, which was a London overspill, a council estate. You know the sort of chaps I'm talking about. And they watched these people coming back. Now, I'm not quite sure how it happened, but Jimmy was real, by the way. Jimmy came to Main Road Baptist Church in Sidcup. And it was an evening service, and the ladies were wearing hats, and we had a good old hymn sandwich. And Jimmy couldn't understand what was going on. Now, our minister was a very understanding character, and between them, he and Jimmy, they persuaded dozens of teddy boys to come to church. And I can remember they all clattered in and they made a noise, and the church welcomed them. But Main Road Baptist Church had to learn an awful lot about how you communicate. And I was in my first teaching job, and I invited a very wise Christian teacher to come. And he just sat down. And he talked with them like that. And they came back. How ready are we for that moment to come when they will come and want to learn more about the Christian faith? I'll leave the challenge with you. Well, it's Holy Week. A lot's going to happen. Let's try once again to begin to understand the meaning of Jesus taking my green card, taking my sin upon him. This may or may not be a true story, but it's a good one. Little girl, 4, was saying prayers with Mummy. And Mummy and little girl said their prayers, and little girl said to Mummy, "Mummy, I love you, but I don't like your hands." And her hands were a mess. A finger was missing. The skin was all gnarled. They were nasty to look at. And Mummy said, "Sally, when you were 1, your cot caught fire, and I grabbed you and took you out of the cot and saved you." And Sally said, "Mummy, I love you, but I love your hands most of all." Jesus gave himself that you may live. And let's exult in that this Easter time.